Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
Hello and welcome to The Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers, pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent. I also serve the Kent Mission in Raynham. We meet once a month, and vacancy pastor for St. Columba Lutheran Church in East Kilbride, Scotland. I'd like to invite you along to attend a service at any of these congregations. But if you don't live anywhere near them, why not go to our website, lutheran.co.uk. Click on the directory button and find the congregation closest to where you live. Go and pay them a visit. I'm sure you'll receive a very warm welcome. Also like to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support of Lutheran Radio UK. Without your prayers and without your generous contributions, our mission wouldn't be able to continue, so we are deeply appreciative of your support. Today we are very pleased to welcome back to Lutheran Radio Dr. Thomas Bakadal. He is lecturer in New Testament at the University of Aberdeen in Scotland and will soon be taking up a new post as professor of New Testament at NLA University in Bergen, Norway. And Dr. Bakadal recently gave a paper at the European Lutheran Conference, and its title was, Is Christianity Fairy Tale? Fake News? Dr. Bakadal, the title of your paper is pretty provocative. So is Christianity a fairy tale? Is it fake news? How would you answer that?
It is a little challenging, isn't it? Many people probably would think so. Is it fake news? Well, in a time with much fake news, you may think that Christianity that was criticized for so long was definitely fake news. What do I think about this? As a theologian and biblical scholar, no, I don't think Christianity is a fairy tale. I don't think it's fake news. To the contrary, really, and there are many things to be said about that, actually.
And you began your paper by quoting one of your mentors, Bishop Bo Hjerts in Sweden. Could you tell us, perhaps begin with that, and tell us what Bo Hjerts had to say about this?
Well, actually, as a young theology student in Gothenburg, over in Sweden, where I come from, in the 1990s, we had the privilege of listening to the late Bishop Bo Hjerts for some years as he taught and preached in the city. And as I recall, he used to make some emphases in his presentations of Christian faith that relate to our topic here. First, he used to actually emphasize that he had personally met and gotten to know the risen Christ. That means that he frequently actually underscored his own personal testimony when he set out to authenticate the Christian truth claim. How he, as a young medical student, had his eyes opened, like the Apostle Paul, really. And as an atheist, as he was at this stage, Bishop Hjerts, during a session with one of his teacher, Nathaniel Beskov in Uppsala, had just been converted. Bishop Hjerts, he also tended to emphasize, beyond his personal testimony, also the eyewitness testimony of the early disciples. He always came back to that as a way of countering criticism of Christianity. There were eyewitnesses from the very start. And he also pointed to the link between these eyewitnesses and the later written gospel. And in that regard, he actually comes close to one of the early church fathers who also makes a similar connection between the orally proclaimed early gospel from the eyewitnesses and the later written down gospel. We have that in Bishop Irenaeus, actually, from the second century. And Irenaeus was a student of Polycarp, who is said to have been a student or pupil of the evangelist John. And this Irenaeus, Bishop Irenaeus in the second century, he says, connecting oral and written tradition, "For we have known the economy for our salvation only through those through whom the gospel came to us, and what they then first preached, they later by God's will transmitted to us in the scriptures. So that will be the foundation and pillar of our faith." And Bo Hjerts, as I recall him, was very fond of this connection between oral and written gospel. And he also connected to a Scandinavian school of oral and written gospel research that was very much led by Professor Birger Gerhardsson and the Swedish tradition historical school, which really tried to connect the orally proclaimed gospel and the written gospel as well. So there were connections made there. Another emphasis, actually, that Bo Gerhards made had to do with his own past as a scientist. He was a medical student before he came to theology and biblical studies, and he always carried that with him throughout life. So when he talked about Christianity or religion, scientific aspects were always part of that, as I remember. Bo Gerhards, he was one of the apologists there, defenders of Christian faith over in Scandinavia, and also at other places I know in the States and in England and so forth. And similar to the role C.S. Lewis had, I think, in the Anglo-Saxon context.
You mentioned Bishop Gerhards. He preached the inaugural sermon for Westfield House in 1962, so we have a good connection with him as well. But you mentioned the scientific connection, and I have often heard it said that, you know, we don't need to believe in Christianity today because science has disproved Christianity. There is no God. There are no miracles. How do we respond to that when they say that miracles and resurrection is fake news?
Well, I do think that science is important, and to have some view of the scientific perspective on things. I tend to think of the psalmist, for instance, in Psalm 14. I think the fools say in their heart, "There is no God." To me, that is very fundamental, very important. And I do agree, for instance, in that regard with one of the scientists out there, David Berlinski. He presents himself as a secular Jew. And when it comes to, for instance, evolutionary theory, he's a great skeptic. He simply says that we don't know. We simply don't know. And he thinks that what Richard Dawkins and others try to present as scientific theory doesn't even, in his view, qualify as a scientific theory at all. So there are critics out there who think it's very complex what is going on, and the code in the DNA is enormously complex, and Darwin didn't even know about these things at all when he formulated his theories initially. And then of course you have laws of physics, and if we don't need a God to explain or account for those, as since they are there already, perhaps you may ask the question how they came into being in the first place, these perfectly designed, as I tend to think, laws of physics, laws of nature with perfect constants that make the laws of physics mathematically even beautiful and perfect. You may reflect around that a little bit, and as a Christian I have no problem thinking that these are designed, and there are questions that can take us even behind the critical questions asked by some scientists today. And as a matter of fact, as far as I'm aware, many scientists and often a higher percentage of scientists actually believe in God as compared to the rest of the population. So I tend to think that studying both theology, studying the Bible as we do in the academy, as I do and others do, can actually promote Christian faith, can promote and support what we believe in the churches already. And the same, I think, goes for scientific study. I have many friends who are scientists, including my wife, actually, and others who are really believers and who find support in the scientists. They find the beauty that God has created right there before their eyes in the mathematical formulas, physical formulas, and so forth. And there's also this very interesting movement that goes under the name intelligent design. They tend to think they're not, they're dealing with the emergence of life and how the natural constants can be the way they are, and if there is a designer behind what we see before us in nature, and the emergence of life, for instance, or in the physical laws. And I think they're going to have a strong voice in the future, even though they are struggling a little bit at the moment because they are so criticized. It's a bit it's expected today that they shouldn't bring God into the equation, so to say.
And not only that, I find that God is not allowed into the equation with, as you say, the natural laws. We've often heard people say, oh, miracles, they could never happen. And you address that in your presentation as well. Would you mention a little bit about how you address that situation where those who said, no, miracles, that's a fairy tale, that's fake news?
Yeah, I think, well, of course, miracles don't happen according to some. The physical laws will explain everything, and in antiquity there were one or two voices that were critical towards the miraculous. Every cause will have an effect, will have a natural explanation. Basically, Cicero was of that view, if I recall correctly. However, most people back in antiquity believed in the miraculous and the possibility of the miraculous. And in modern times, David Hume, the philosopher, was formulated critical principles marginalizing the notion of the miraculous, saying that it's very unlikely that a miracle actually took place when something has happened and needs an explanation. It can be explained in natural ways. However, and he based that very much on experience. If one person has an experience of something, the laws of nature and all those who had experiences of the laws of nature will win the discussion, so to say. So it's very unlikely that the miraculous has taken place or can be used to account for things. Also, Hume, he mentions that beliefs in miracles and the miraculous happens happens in areas of the world where people don't have so much education, where they are more simple-minded and so forth. I think that's a bit unfair to say or to present it like that. And as it turns out, actually today there's a New Testament scholar and there are other scholars that deal with these issues. But the New Testament scholar I'm thinking about is Craig Keener. He has written a two-volume book on miracles, where he interviews people from all over the world who's actually experienced the miraculous healings and so forth, and who do believe in miracles in their own life. And that is very fascinating, actually. So experience, according to Craig Keener in this book, today tells us that people are much more open towards the miraculous, especially those who have experienced it or say that they have experienced, than you may think. So that means that the pendulum is now swinging, since Craig Keener is not the only one emphasizing this different agenda. So I think that's very exciting. Craig Keener, for instance, he tells about his wife's sister. His wife is from Congo, and her sister is claimed to have been raised from the dead when she was a child. And there are a couple of witnesses to that. Among those are his wife's mother and so forth. And there are other such testimonies that we have here in the West as well about X-rays showing an incurable cancer one day, and the next day or week, everything is gone, and there is no medical explanation. And we have other similar healing accounts that we may know of, even personally. I have a friend who's very critically minded, who said that she was in this prayer group, actually in Norway, some years ago, and they prayed that her friend's leg would extend, and she claims that it actually did, like with considerably. So she was totally surprised by that, and something she passed on to me. And of course you can always be critical when you hear stories like that, but I have no real reason to be overly critical. And as I read the New Testament, Mark's Gospel, for instance, it's full of miracles. It's miracle after miracle after miracle that Jesus performs. And what should we make about that? What should we make of miracles that the early church fathers talk about? As Christians, we normally embrace that as part of our belief, don't we? I personally think that just existing, that my bodily functions are in place all at the same time, 100,000 chemical reactions, a professor told me once, functioning at the same time, and they need to be coordinated for me to be able to speak even now. I think that is a total miracle.
And I think you're right. There are so many things that happen in our lives that are miracles that we just take for granted. I mean, we look for the big things, and I've been involved in one or two of those as well, where, you know, the medical profession is just amazed and dumbfounded by what they see. But we're also talking, as you say, about Jesus. He did a lot of miracles. He did those miracles to point to himself, is that right, as Messiah?
Well, he did, and to some degree he also performed miracles to corroborate what he was teaching, his teaching about the kingdom of God that is coming and that is near, and that it is important that people receive that message, that reality from God. And the miracles were there to confirm that reality very much, and they obviously made an impression on people back in Galilee and where he was active, and also in Judea. So miracles had such a role, and I think that the greatest miracle of them all, of course, in the New Testament is Jesus' own resurrection, and that also underlines or corroborates actually Jesus' whole public ministry, his teaching, and also his former miracles, we could say as well. And of course, it lays the foundation for Christianity and our outlook as Christians of life. Life as miraculous, where actually providence as well in our own lives as another type of miraculous outlook, providence or governance in our own lives is something you as Christian actually include in your worldview.
Now, Thomas, you mentioned that the miracles have been attested by the New Testament and even the early church fathers. Can you talk a little bit more about that? How does that happen, and how does that impact our view of Jesus, not a fairy tale, but as the truth?
Yeah, first of all, when I come to Christianity, and I did that initially as a non-believer, and I come from such a background, then I looked at, first of all, the number of witnesses, how many people are claiming these things. It's not only one person, because that one person could possibly have made things up. So for me, it was very important on a personal level to have a broad and secure testimony. So, and I like to read about Paul in Galatians 1:20, where he says that what I'm telling you is the truth. I take God as my witness. And he says that also in other places, in Romans and elsewhere. So that is important to me, Paul, as an expert, he's a Pharisee, he's an educated man, he's a committed person, that he is guaranteeing his truth in this way. Also, Paul agrees with the other apostles there in Galatians 2 and in Acts 15. They meet in Jerusalem and they shake hands and they agree on things. And it's Paul and it's James and it's Peter and it's John. And it's very powerful with these pillars of the early Christian movement that Paul speaks about. So Christianity is not something that is just claimed by one person. It's claimed by all the leaders that were actually, in many cases, converted at different places, and they come from different places, and they didn't know one another from the beginning. Paul didn't know James and or Peter, but they have come to the faith, to the resurrection faith, actually, independently of one another, and they've had resurrection appearances, experience that independent of one another. We also have the early Jesus movement during Jesus' public ministry. Let's say 50 or 60,000 people experienced Jesus' actual teaching and his healings and so forth. And he became well known throughout the ancient world as a miracle performer, miracle maker, and a wise man, as Josephus, the history writer, says. So he was known among Jews, Gentiles, and within the Christian movement itself, of course, as such an amazing man. So already there you see many testimonies, many eyewitnesses, and that continues actually. So after Jesus' death, he's believed to have been come to life again, resurrected. So there are several resurrection witnesses and that, independent of one another, say the same things, and they also had the empty tomb as a testimony to what was claimed to have happened, that he's actually come to life again. And then you have the amazing appearance, sociological appearance, we can say, of early Christianity, even in the capital of the Roman Empire, just 30 years later, when Christianity had become so so influential. So lots of Christians in Rome in the 60s, where they are persecuted, and they really, because still they hold on to their faith despite persecution, despite suffering, and so forth. And they put to death for their faith, but they still hold on and press on. So I think that is a very interesting testimony in itself, that Christianity spread rapidly, became very popular. And of course, throughout that period we're speaking about here, eyewitnesses, lots of them, and in the New Testament, eyewitnesses to the resurrection are said to be over 500 or 600. And eyewitnesses to Jesus' public ministry were probably 50 or 60,000, as we said. And then you have totally successful movement that eventually became the state religion in the 4th century of the Roman Empire. So what was needed for early Christianity to have such success early on in the 60s in Rome, for instance, or in northern Asia Minor in the first century, as we also have external testimony to, what made Christianity so successful? You need something very powerful to make that happen, and a resurrection belief up front would be a resurrection up front of the movement, as the movement itself actually claims is the case, would explain things better than anything else, I would say.
All right, Thomas, you've got Paul and James and Peter and John proclaiming this resurrected Jesus, but it doesn't seem to make any sense. It does sound like a fairy tale. I've never known anybody that has risen from the dead. So how could this message take traction and actually grow? It does sound like fake news.
Well, I think Paul, for instance, himself, he refers to this as foolishness. The cross of Christ is foolishness. That God, taking on human form, comes and lives among us, and then is put to death and crucified. And crucifixion was the worst criminal punishment. Punishment for criminals there was in the Roman Empire. So this is really crazy, and it's foolishness, which Paul actually then refers to. But it was true, on the other hand. Paul had met the resurrected Christ, just as others had met him, James and the women, and Peter and so forth. So they had experienced these things. It was real, not only to them, but to all the brothers and sisters who actually encountered the resurrected Jesus. And in the New Testament, it is referred to over 500 or 600 people who actually encounter the resurrected Jesus. So it was something that really had impact, an impact on their lives. So despite the fact that it's foolishness, it's real to them. Also, Christianity is all about truth, isn't it? And Paul can therefore refer to it as the truth, and the Gospel of John does that, of course, as well. So it impacts their whole lives, and that impact in their own lives also impacts others. So it looks to others as an authentic thing, really. And Paul, he refers in his letter to the Galatians to miracles and incredible things that happened in the midst of his preaching to them. It was the Holy Spirit that was at work, and people experienced that. So the testimony of the Holy Spirit is very important here. And the miraculous, it can be very important as well to corroborate what was actually happening. And after Jesus had been resurrected and walked among them and showed himself to the apostles for 40 days, before his ascension, then they experienced many miraculous dimensions of the religion as well, which they shared with one another. And Paul, of course, he had met with James and Peter and John and so forth in Jerusalem. He knew them, and they could share their different experiences of the resurrected Jesus. The whole Christian movement is full of people whose lives have been transformed. Paul is just one of them. His companion Barnabas and Peter and James and all the others, they come from different corners of the Roman Empire, and they have all, among the early followers there, been caught by this new reality. Something happening in the midst of them. And also, during their worship services, they're calling actually on the living Jesus, the living Christ, to be with them, and they had that experience all the way through. So the Christian life as such is full of this conviction, you could say, the presence of the Lord, and it's just a life-changing reality all the way through. Historically, as we can also see, as Christianity spread, that they were really willing to sacrifice their lives. They wouldn't sacrifice to the emperor or make the emperor God or acknowledge the emperor as God or divine. They would rather die, and they died actually the most terrifying deaths. You could die here in the arenas in Rome, for instance, where great multitudes of Christians were put to death. As they were blamed for the fire of Rome under Nero, for instance. It was just terrible torture that they experienced at that point. And that made an impression as well on people. They saw that these Christians, they are fully permeated by what they believe in, and they have full integration, and they are willing to sacrifice even their lives for their faith. So it meant everything to them, and they had every reason to believe what they did believe as well. And many of them were living witnesses, even from encounters with Jesus during his public ministry. At this time, hundreds of people or thousands of people had that experience early on here. So it's not a made up fairy tale at all, actually. It's not a joke, since they were being put to death as martyrs, and it's not a fairy tale, since their whole lives are radically changed from their experiences in all kinds of ways, and there's studies even of the scriptures that these things that are now happening in this Jesus were actually prophesied and are now being fulfilled amongst us. That is what Luke writes about. That is what John writes about. That is what Matthew specializes in, actually, scriptural fulfillment. That is what Paul writes just at the outset there of Romans, for instance. So scripture is involved. A divine reality is coming upon them here. This very insignificant area of the Roman Empire in Galilee and Judea, and these very insignificant people, fishermen, simple people. Paul was a bit more educated, of course, but he may be a bit of an exception here in the early movement. Simple people who were used by God to bring about a world-changing scenario when Christianity starts from nothing. Is presented as a foolishness, because the cross of Christ is just foolishness to the Greeks, and it's a stumble block to Jews, Paul says. And this foolish religion becomes the state religion of the Roman Empire and eventually affects all of European and Western culture and all other cultures as well, it seems, very powerful. And the ethics involved here is great as well. Good focus on that. And the love principle is great as well. Love for your enemies, for instance, that principle, or take care of your neighbor. The whole message of Jesus was powerful in itself and convinced people. And it was also then confirmed by the miraculous in various ways. People who encountered the living Jesus, who's actually involved in all of these aspects we were talking about, they were just converted.
Dr. Bacchadol, thank you very much for this very stimulating and interesting introduction into the resurrection. If you are willing, we'd love to have you back and carry on this conversation next week.
Thank you very much. It was lovely being with you.
Great stuff. And we invite our listeners to join us next week as we carry on our conversation with Dr. Thomas Bacchadol on Christianity. Is it fairy tale, fake news, or is it the truth?
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.